teen starts writing poetry with no individuals in there, and wondering maybe the same questions, but coming up with different strategies of writing in response to that problem. Let's see. How do you resist brainwashing? You see, he's very literary in his approach to the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants individual and original thinking. What about the services of mass thinking? Is there nothing to be said for the creative effects of mass media on people's brains thinking? Is it all that bad? Well, it's going to take over. So if you want to be perpetually alienated, you would remain stuck in Mr. Ford's attitude. But that will make you quite alienated from your society.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to look at the services of this new situation, as well as the disservices, or at least not be trapped on one side in your judgment of the situation. And that's what McLuhan did. So look at this. She says, as previously discussed, in his later volumes, McLuhan will never repeat such a clear-cut criticism of cultural phenomena. He will not be precisely alienated like Ford. He will no longer explain what he sees. Rather, he will only render his explorations with no party bias. As he pointed out, quote, I try to avoid value judgments. I neither approve nor disapprove. I merely try to understand. I am an observer in these matters, not a participant. My personal point of view is irrelevant. End of quote. It is an attitude, Lamberti says, which Ford himself had already encouraged when acting, not as an opinion maker, but as an impressionist writer. So she's actually saying that Ford anticipated McLuhan's detachment. So she quotes Ford, the only thing of value is the concrete fact. See, so that's, what is concrete fact? If that's the medium, then that's the same as McLuhan. But he says, the concrete fact is only of value as an illustration of a state of mind, a characteristic in an individual. See, he's still looking at individuals being altered by environments. The fact should be stated first. The moral may or may not be drawn in so many words. The moral may or may not be drawn in so many words. Theoretically, it ought not to be, because the first duty of an artist is not to comment and precisely not to moralize. Okay, so he's getting the idea of no value judgments, but it's all to preserve the past, these strategies.
Right. Okay, I'm done.
No, we're not. We got just a little bit here. I'll get into it. Because there is, as I look at this, there are statements by Lamberti, where she's trying to show Ford is pretty cool if you apply to McLuhan, but he's as cool as McLuhan, but his goals are
moralistic.
Well, yeah, value-oriented. Because he ends up weeping that he's forgotten.
Now, where you read, look, next paragraph, kind of in the middle, the paragraph that begins in this way, in the middle, as a writer, Ford denounced the malaise of his time in an allegorical way through his fictional and anecdotal storytelling, enlightening what lies behind the opalescent surface of things. So, and then
Let me read this part.
Yeah.
I was going to read that part anyways, but let's go. As a writer, Ford Madox Ford denounced the malaise of his time in an allegorical way through his fictional and anecdotic storytelling. So he wrote books about the problem, enlightening what lies behind the opalescent surface of things. Whereas McLuhan used fiction, anecdotes, and the storytelling of Ford and other writers as his own lifelong subtext, his analogical mirrors to speculate on the world of progress and to develop a new strategy that rendered not only what he saw, but also the very process of observation in which he engaged. Even though Ford and McLuhan experimented with different genres and areas of study, they both were engaged intellectuals trying to read, quote, the language of the outer world and relate it to the inner world. And they were both innovators in their own field as they developed a new form to render and mold their operative project. Their own new forms became not just a way to embellish their observations, but an important part of their cognitive process. The poetics of both Ford and McLuhan originate from their desire to be witnesses of complex cultural ages, which were also ages of passage from one societal matrix to a new one, characterized by the expansion in technologies of communication. Further down, Ford died in 1939, just as McLuhan started his career as a university professor. Looking at the same phenomenon from two different but contingent moments in history, Ford and McLuhan become witnesses to the shrinking of the world on a vast scale, as well as to a standardized approach to actuality, increasingly mediated through new media and a new media infrastructure. The global village, which McLuhan theorizes, was already intuited by Ford Madox Ford, who presented his version of it in the volume, quote, A History of Our Own Time, unquote, as follows. So let's read this paragraph. Now, McLuhan was...
What?
Much of McLuhan was application of other people.
Hmm.
For example, Joyce. He considered his work applied Joyce.
Hmm.
So Lamberti is implying that there's a bit of applied Ford in McLuhan. But the point is, a lot of people were making these statements in different arts and that, you know. It's McLuhan made a big leap into a level that none of the artists and scientists really were ready for. So let's see what she says here about how Ford predicts the global village. So Ford says, be that as it may, it is, premising that we peoples whose shores nearly enclose an island sea are already all one people, meaning the British, it is with that as it shows donné that this book will set out. We are, that is to say, at one in everything save the barrier that we still maintain in our frontiers. And those barriers are purely artificial and by all logic absurd. An expose of how we all now resemble one another of the present-day standardization of the Western world, I do not need here to make. Anyone can make it for himself. It is sufficient here to point out that with the enormous increase of means of communication, not merely by locomotion, but with ear and eye, and with the establishment in all our relationships of nearly standardized and practically secularized system of universal primary instruction, the minds of us all are being very truth standardized. And with a very little more attention to education in modern languages, there's no reason why a native of Levallois-Perret, I guess that's in France, should not feel as at home in Hoboken as in the other suburb of his birth. So that we are all, whether as a nation or individuals, much of a muchness, whether in blood or civilization. We are all made up of about the same matter, and our civilizations are all of much the same blend. But the material point to observe is that these purely artificial and pseudoscientific, pseudohistoric dividings up of humanity are nowadays as absurd as were the custom barriers the small Germany potentates used to set up at every few miles of main road through Low Germany. And they grow more absurd every day. Now, what he's probably missing is the actual angelization of mankind, the discarnate state that Lewis picked up on.
Hmm.
So he's still trying to organize the global theater into an efficient world bureaucracy. You could, if LaRouche was here, he would say this is mere propaganda for the British oligarchs bringing in a world government.
Nah.
You know, so he's a dupe of the world government guys. And Lewis gets past the world government guys by saying, hey, we've already disappeared and we're now super angels.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he's definitely part of an elite of avant-garde perception, but being born in 1873, I guess he just is not up to the 20th century, actually, to get to the more dramatic points that McLuhan's going to learn from Lewis and Joyce. So, you know, this title, The Literary Origins of Media Studies, well, maybe you got to get into the actual particular origins, not just literary. And if you're citing literary, what did he get from Lewis and Joyce and Pound that he didn't get from other writers?
Mm-hmm.
So you might have to make some distinctions. And it says, it is unlikely that McLuhan ever read Ford's statement because even though his manuscript originates approximately 1930, it was not published until 1988 and was in the Cornell University Library since 1973. So this is an example of scholars going back and finding something and then speculating on it, just like that Korth guy is doing about the Kennedy assassination just this week, right?
Mm-hmm.
Finding new bit of information and trying to revolve a whole new timeline out of that. Even Ezra Pound used to criticize McLuhan for trying to find out who said what and who led to what.
Uh-huh.
It's what you do now with the stuff, not researching and retracing. So that's another argument. People would say, no, no, we've got to know where we came from. So she's finding interesting points, like she says, page 169. McLuhan later developed a similar strategy. As he pointed out, Ford sentences are not mere chat, and his anecdotes are small epiphanies of carefully considered social and literary structures and their interpenetration. As we saw earlier, for McLuhan, words are also more than a series of letters. They are, quote, a complex system of metaphors and symbols through which, quote, the entire world can be evoked and retrieved at any instant. For him, too, the world, the world cannot be narrated but must be rendered to his readers in a direct way. McLuhan's mosaic, just like Ford's new form, that was Ford's term, I guess, his impressionist novels, Ford's novels, McLuhan's mosaic, like them, is a complex and broken form of writing based on the juxtaposition of verbal probes acting just like Ford's impressions, italicized, juxtaposed in order to involve the reader in a progression of effects leading to epiphanies, to knowledge and understanding. Both Ford's and McLuhan's forms of writing develop, not through distance or linear rendering, but in media res. Remember I was telling you about that? In the middle, but in media's res and through a direct mimesis, because the world cannot be narrated. The world and our own experience of it is. So she's saying that Ford perceived percept, like McLuhan did. But you can take, I think it's Nathaniel Hawthorne, back in 1851, talks about the effect of the telegraph, the blinding effect of the telegraph on the world. 1851. And that's another example of finding people that were onto stuff. And that's what McLuhan said. He said his book should have been, his book, Gutenberg Galaxy, should have been written 100 years before. There was enough information around by perceivers and thinkers to put together that book.
Right.
So that's maybe the fallacy of looking back and seeing what people were writing. We could say the obsolescence of Ford, if he's so prophetic and intuits McLuhan, then he was not perceptive enough of the devastating anarchy that the new media would bring in so that Ford would not even be remembered, even though he was perceptive in his day. McLuhan said that when radio came in, a million years of evolution happened in a second.
Oh,
we were
wow.
so altered by radio.
Uh-huh.
You know, evolution is not in biology, it's in technology. We were so mutated that compared to traditional Darwinian evolution, we had mutated a million years worth of evolution in 1 minute.
Right.
That level of what McLuhan had to deal with, that level of what was going on. And you need a radical writer like James Joyce to make a ridiculous book that you can't read and make sense out of what it means to catch you up with the devastating effects of media. So Ford didn't seem to have McLuhan's courage in seeing deeper and more horribly. The horror. As Joseph Conrad wrote.
Right. So this whole next section right to the end is Lamberti going into Ford's book, The Fifth Queen.
About the effect of the printed book.
Yeah, trying to compare it to McLuhan's Gutenberg Galaxy. So that gets very literarily technical, so I give up.
All right, so let me see what I got here. She says, it still surprises me, this is on page 169, it still surprises me that the works of Marshall McLuhan have never before been linked to those of Ford Madox Ford, at least not in a systematic way as they should have. You know, McLuhan quotes Lamartine, who in 1831 said that the newspaper will take over and the book arrives too late. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of people to quote and be influenced by, so to speak. You know, don't have to focus on any one of them. But she makes a nice case fitting in what Ford did with what we know McLuhan did.
Mm-hmm.
So she said, I did try, in fact, to suggest that connection about 10 years ago so that's 2002, at a Ford Maddox Ford conference in Munster, Westfalen, Germany. On that occasion, I approached Ford's historical romance, The Fifth Queen, written in 1906 to 1908, in the light of McLuhan's media theories. I still remember the perplexed glance among my colleagues in literary studies. It was both an odd and a funny experience. A decade later, after the blooming of new interdisciplinary studies, I think it is worth retrieving that approach to show how the interplay of media and literature can, in fact, enlighten the cultural gray or hybrid zones, that is, the interfacing passage from one form of society to the next. I will therefore now elaborate on that essay, which was nevertheless published by the benevolent organizers of the symposium in the volume dedicated to Ford Maddox Ford's individual talent. So when you get anywhere near McLuhan, you start actually applying him, you're not going to do very well in your discipline, in academia.
Mm-hmm.
Academia is so POB-oriented. So she's flailing around in a very frustrated field,
mm-hmm.
in a frustrating field. Give it up.
McLuhan told his students, don't write about me. You'll never get your Ph.D.
Yeah, don't quote me. So brave effort by Lamperti on resuscitating Ford Maddox Ford, but we don't read books anymore. We're not interested in books. I'm the only guy who's got all the time to read books, and I can't get anybody to talk about what I read. So I ignore what I do and move ahead living the world of cloned ESP and changing the world with dramatic innovations that nobody in university life is interested in hearing about. On the McLuhan list or the McLuhan Facebook pages, and neither from you, Miss Lamberti. Why aren't you on our products? Why aren't you involved in the new technologies that even McLuhan had a hint of? Because Carolyn gave him something a week before he collapsed on September 26, 79. He failed to make the trip, failed to make the bridge. And now we're left with books remembering the whole caboodle of radical modernists and their forlorn efforts of tragic lives that led nowhere unless you are a professor and are forced to read this stuff because you get paid to do it. So please adapt yourself to the present so we don't make the same mistake McLuhan and everybody else did up to this point. We are the first to actually take what's new, apply it, and be successful at it. Hugely successful. To the point they will be studying me and my puny broadcasts in 100 years from now, and how I predicted everything and nobody had even caught up to me 100 years from now. They will not have caught up to me even then, nor Dr. Dean here. So, we will do James Joyce the next time. With the same statements, the same criticisms, and the same enthusiasms, and the same apologies, and the same discrimination. With the same endpoint, study Bob, or face the blank state of the Android meme.
Very good, Bob. Thank
you. All right.
Thank you for the treasury of your wisdom.
Right. Now, let's just see what Nick and Madeline say, but what? How'd you like my summary there? You guys still conscious? Can you comment on my dismissal of the book we're reviewing for hours on end? Waiting for communications. Let's hope Bert can come in. Bert will have something to say. Maybe it just didn't keep anybody's attention.
Where's Bert?
Yes. We need Bert. Reinforcement. So, Madeline, did you take in what we said, or is it
no,
too many words?
No, I did not. Yeah.
Too many words said too fast, right?
Yeah. I'm a failure.
No. We're the failure. But it's a Don Quixote process here. We're shooting at windmills. But what did you get, if you listened and didn't turn it off completely, what impression do you get of what you've heard the last hour? What do you think we were trying to say, or what is Mrs. Lamberti saying?
I didn't even tune in enough.
You just knew it wasn't important.
It's more like I got overwhelmed immediately, and that was that.
Right. So let's look, analyze at this communication situation here. We're doing this book, which is a tough prospect just from that, doing any book. But what would you rather talk about? You as a modern citizen, what is it that's molding you? What do you think is important? Do you ever read books?
Not anymore.
Right. Just don't read them. Did you used to read a lot?
I did. I used to read constantly, but probably not the kind of thing that I should have been reading.
Well, what did you read? Popular stuff?
No. I read weird things. I like stuff about, well, like science fiction and I like the psychedelic stuff, time travel, portals, stuff like that.
Well, that's New Age talk, isn't it?
I don't know. Drugs.
You don't even know what you read.
Drugs.
Are you talking about Carlos Castaneda?
Oh yeah, I love Carlos Castaneda. Yeah, I guess New Age stuff.
Yes.
I never really.
And that is. Yeah. Go ahead.
The last book that I read, and I didn't even finish it, weirdly, but because I loved it, was about plants and how to pick up what they're all about. I don't know. It was really interesting.
That
it was
book?
A weird.
The huh? Secret Life of Plants, that book, Secret Life of Plants?
Oh, I read that. Yep, I read that one. I loved it, but that's not the one I'm talking about.
But what fantasies,
kind of,
what fantasies did you think you had that these books satisfied? Well, what did it tell you about plants? You know, what was significant there for your ideas of reality? You know, why would that appeal to you?
I think it told me a lot more about humans than it did about plants. I think, you know what, I'm sort of always trying to figure out what hell I am and
what
is going on. I'm always trying to figure out what I am, like how I'm interested in how I perceive things, which, I mean, McLuhan's all about that, but I get lost. You make me
you
feel
get
really
lost
stupid.
Yeah, you only started feeling intelligent about 6 months ago when you wrote your manifesto. You finally had arrived, right?
I didn't feel intelligent then.
Well, you felt relieved. You felt inspired.
I felt inspired. Yeah, I was taken over by a demon when I did that.
Oh, there's a new statement, updated statement. We have not heard that assessment. Oh, Madeline's not the same person again. She rejects that inspired demon.
No, I don't.
Oh, okay.
Just saying.
But you were possessed. Have you gone around and apologized to everybody?
Hell no. In fact, someone just came up to me and said, "You've gone really quiet on Facebook. You're not posting all your crazy shit anymore." And I said, "I'm not on Facebook, and you're still completely deluded."
Yeah, I was not wrong.
Yeah.
I just realized my audience was too fucking stupid to take advantage of my expertise.
Pretty much. And he
now
said, "Oh, well, nice to see you. Bye."
Yeah, you're not going to be no fun to talk to. All right, so you're saying let's go into it. How are you possessed? How is that a disservice? Or maybe it isn't. Maybe it was good, a service.
Yeah,
to
I don't
you.
Know. I'm not saying that with any sort of judgment, but I was absolutely possessed when I did that.
Have you got an idea of what you're possessed by?
I mean, Ion leaps to mind. It was interesting because, Bob, I was, like, physically on fire for 2 days after that.
Right.
I mean, not on fire, a very electric. I couldn't sleep. I was super energized. Something happened.
Like,
something hit me. I don't know
right.
what that was, but it was not normal.
Now, people might say that happens to people all through history, but I think it happens to a lot more people nowadays than ever before.
Yeah, probably.
Are the convergence of art, science, nature, and media, and then the five bodies is just causing people to not even need psychedelics to have an intense experience, you know?
I would agree.
Yeah. And that's an interesting phenomenon. So I think Croker does a pretty good, you know, run at this issue, these issues in his books in the 90s. Like hearing a guy talk about, well, just hearing about Ford Maddox Ford and his novel, we are definitely, what's the advantage of knowing where we came from or what they were doing in a milder way 100 years ago doesn't seem to be relevant to people. Maybe.
No.
Go ahead.
The thing, I like finding out that it's different from what I thought because it opens everything up again.
Right. So more and more wacky ideas are what's needed.
Yeah.
And David Icke is a good figure of that. He made the book interesting for Generation X, you know, by writing his ridiculous theories. That's what people, maybe, they were trying to get any means to get out of the what they perceived was a homogenized consensus around everybody. Because Americans have grown up to be literate and have a visual bias, they think that 1984 is taking over the world and everybody's being brainwashed. They don't see that everybody's being atomized and actually hyper-subjective and creative in their own crazy individual way. Actually, we need more homogenizing. That's what all the politicians claim to be trying to do. Now, we may not... that's a public acceptable idea. We ain't going that way, and no wonder people are having intense experiences because it's going to get even more crazy. So there's no time for people to have perspective, but the only useful perspective might be that your communication environment around you, the medium around you, is what's freaking you out. That seems to be the only useful thing to know. To get into, oh, the trees are dying, or the sea turtles are being obsolesced, or other sort of particularized issues and concerns. Transgendered people are not allowed to get insurance. Black people are being killed constantly in the ghettos. Those are anthropomorphic projections because you got people who live in comfortable suburbs, comfortable, wealthy environments who are going crazy. Anyways, so there's something else. You can even say that you, feeling you got possessed, is that you woke up. You woke, you know, I am woke. That's the new cliche, right? You were woke to the fact that you have been possessed by media or by the multiple body situation. That's what you woke up to the actual crazy condition you've been hijacked by. Not that you were abnormal and were singled out and hijacked into a personal apocalypse. There are at least 500 million people on the planet went through the same thing at the same time around the world as you did. Because of the global android meme, the global membrane. Am I waxing too eloquent?
Well, I mean, I'm getting particular with it and saying, you know, it was Q that made me say, okay, Ion was right, and that's what, you know, that's what set me off.
Right. So Q is causing this intensity in a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yes. So Q is the modern artist. If you say an artist is someone who alters people's perceptions and puts them into intense states that they didn't expect, and then they become zombies for it or cult members or just the best, that's, see, the Q phenomenon is a figure for ground, and there's been, as I said in that recording we heard a few hours ago, I used the Church of Subgenius phrase, everybody has a temporary, personal, short-duration savior. I think it is a temporary, short-duration, personal savior. People go through all kinds of intense identification with different kinds of charisma, and so they have metaphysical promiscuity in the long run. But
oh God, that's
who are the artists of that? What?
That's me to a T. I'm very metaphysically promiscuous.
Right.
Until now.
And you need new pattern recognitions every 18 months, new novelties, because around you the world is going through that 24/7 on the Android meme level that humans can't even keep up with. But they slowly and dumbly and ham-fistedly flip out about every 18 months. And whereas the Android meme is doing it every 18 hours. So let's see, where is this leading? So your art history world, your university professors are not talking about Q as the latest Stravinsky or what's that guy, Auberjonois, Alfred Jarry, his play in 1896, you know, Upset Paris, Stravinsky 1913. Dylan at Newport, 1965, you know, all these intense things that figures have done are totally cliche, so cliche that we now say here at headquarters that there's no anthropomorphic level to the inspiration that the Android meme is engendering in itself. These freakouts are happening inside the Android meme itself.
To the Android meme? No.
Yes.
You mean inside? Oh, wow.
Yes. The Android meme's collapsing. That's what Trump represents. Trump was able to put some cracks into the Android meme. And it's the Android meme that's lashing back at him. The Android meme shrunk everything to make power, people get take back their power on a communication level and run their own broadcasting situation. And the general consensus of what the internet or Android meme was could not hold up with the fragmenting power of super angel broadcasters, micro nano broadcasters. And they swamped the old fashioned analog media and the Android meme, the digital part. And they're still trying to figure out how and what happened. And they're calling it the horseless buggy. They're saying it's Russian intelligence or the alt-right.
Yeah.
I mean, these puny little categories.
No, it's funny. And then you got the rampant censorship.
Yes, the
I mean, little old me, like, I'm censored.
I know. Hey, what?
It's crazy.
What happened to the stock today or yesterday? Did Facebook obliterate itself?
Last I saw, they were down 20% or something. Pretty significant.
Right.
Mark Zuckerberg personally lost billions.
That's ridiculous. He lost more money than 500 countries have. You know, one individual. See, this is not human. And
no.
I've been saying the Android meme. Now look at this. I'll call this one for me. I said that Trump represented the destruction of the Android meme, and we're watching the first part of the Android meme, Facebook, go down. And they'll have all kinds of crazy ideas, but no, it's beyond that. You know what? There never was a fucking election. That's what happened, is Trump just sort of out-talk the Android meme and just walk into the empty place. And there's nothing to do there other than to keep repeating what he said. Nothing to do there. And go around and meet people on a one-to-one basis. It's just like your average university prof going to their disciplinary conferences. That's what he's doing. He's just going around meeting guys in the same roles he's got and establishing personal relationships with them. And the world's trying to figure out, is this of any significance to anybody? Does this mean we will not kill ourselves in a nuclear war or something, you know? I'll try to figure out what it means. And there was this woman, she was screaming at Trump while he's sitting there with the president of the EU or something. Do you guys see that footage? The reporters?
No, she pulled like a Jim Acosta thing, though.
Yeah, something
yeah,
like that. Well,
they're like rabid now. It's crazy.
Right. So there's Trump saying, talking with the EU guy, and then they finish. He says, thank you. And then the press, up, which is like 20 feet from him, you know, roars up, uproars, you know, bellows out, starts screaming, yelling stuff about Michael Cohen's tapes. And Trump just keeps saying, mouthing, thank you, thank you. He says thank you about 100 times, thank you. And I'm watching, you can see the EU guy, and he's sitting in his chair like a little kid, just like mesmerized. Look at these reports, what the fuck's going on? And he's probably thinking, holy shit, I'm at the center of the storm. If you get near Trump and get into the White House, you're at the center of the storm. And he was sitting there like amazed at what he was witnessing. You know what I mean? He lost all diplomatic demeanor. He just was flabbergasted at what was going on. And there were a couple of, looked like Trump aides, some guys, bodyguards. And one guy is saying, while the blonde is screaming at Trump, he's saying, I just can't believe it. This is outrageous, you know? Everybody's in a state of shock in the room. Everybody. And Trump, he may be in a state of shock, but he's used to it, so he just keeps saying, thank you, thank you, thank you, and ignoring them, you know? So what is a five-year-old, what is an eight-year-old think of this if they actually saw it? You know, what do they think's going on in adult land? I think it's going to cause more and more autism, which is, you know, escape. But very interesting. And I know Trump banned somebody, but it might have been someone else from CNN. But what do they think? What do they think is going to come from it? They think they're going to get back. They're going to put Mike Pence in. What would Mike Pence do if Trump gets knocked out? Right, he'd go back and be a nicer, blander guy. Would he be able to take the endless rebellion against him as well as Trump takes it? So Trump is the perfect president for a population that has gone insane for reasons not what the journalists say. There's other reasons everybody is having Trump derangement syndrome. It's the breakdown of communication completely in the Android meme. Breakdown of matching balance to the point that people are going to ignore all the scandals that Trump does and vote him in anyways. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because, hey, he's a guy that's used to this mania. Let's keep him in there. Are you guys with me? Anybody here?
Yeah. Yeah, the media, the journalists, the Trump derangement people have no idea that they are creating
over indifference?
Information overload. Well, it's abuse overload to the point it's like they're crying wolf so much that people are just, they are already turned off.
They turned off as soon as Trump got elected.
Yeah. So it's doing nothing more than making people more insensitive to their liberal plight. And I hope everybody's going to vote Republican, whatever that means.
Doesn't mean anything. Just maintain stability.
Yep.
We know this. We don't know what could come after, and it can only be worse. So let's just maintain. So everybody instantly, when they become president, becomes a god of stability. Are you with me, people? I need some response here to my amazing projections and hijacking of what Carolyn said. What do you think, Bert?
Am I muted?
Madeline Blown or what? She's. I have to go over and see if she got muted.
Oh.
People get knocked off.
Am I muted?
Yeah, muted. Madeline's muted. Sorry, Madeline. You've been muted.
Hi.
What do you think of what I said, Madeline?
Did you see that?
What do you think what Carolyn said?
I'm actually responding to that.
Okay.
Psychologists are reporting, like, Trump derangement syndrome is a real issue now. Like, they're having to give people real therapy for it.
That's great.
It's a real problem, and but it's the media, because they're listening to this shit. Like, they're being told every day, 10 times a day, that the world is going to end, and when one crisis passes, well, there's another one. Now it's ending because of this. And all your rights and the rights of your friends are about to be taken away. You're going to be in the street. Everything's horrible. And they're, like, focusing on, they believe it. And they're losing their freaking minds. They're, like, tremendous anxiety. It's, like, profound, profound anxiety and anguish that some of the people are experiencing.
Yes. And the 15 people on our products are having a great fucking time. Yeah, Bob derangement. Bob rearrangement syndrome. That's what this is. Bob rearrangement, not Trump derangement.
I really, truly wonder where I would fall in the spectrum if I had not come across
you.
Because I was a raging liberal. I don't know. I mean, I was never really... I don't know where I would be.
And I don't even know where you were.
I definitely didn't. I mean, I had stopped voting decades ago. So
that's not the issue. It's your every day.
Well, I knew everything was lies.
Right, but that's not the issue. You have to make up a pattern out of the information overload every day, and that's your community. Your statement about the pattern you think is worth knowing about. From whatever source of media you get it. And you have to be able to communicate that pattern in some way to other people when demanded. That's what's required to be a citizen, a functioning, well-adjusted citizen. And that's why, since you're making up patterns from uncategorizable overload of information, you might as well say it's a lie. And you're going to make up a lie. So if you're going to have to be a president, and you have to have perfect pitch to be president, you have to be a damn good fucking liar. And even, like, all presidents have to lie for national security reasons, but to actually put it in front of everybody and lie blatantly, that's the new charisma. Trump learned to consciously lie and put it in your fucking face, because that's what we all have to live every day. All the things that we thought about the last 10 years in the public level, all absurd topics. You know, going back to Lewinsky or something. It's all fucking ridiculous patterns about nothing that came and went. Right?
Right.
Well, no? No?
Yeah.
Right? Yes? No? No, Bert, we're ready for you.
Okay. No, it's Bob, your patterns that you just laid out, this is why people need to listen to you. It's crazy. It's really, I mean, it's there's something you said that the Android meme is broke. And I'm like, that's what I'm seeing. It's broke. That's why Ion is gone. It's, I've been around. It's broke. Totally. It's on one wheel. Used to have
right.
five.
Yeah. And the solutions are here. It's hard to believe that a small number of people, namely 2 and 3, 4 people, have the solutions to everything.
Yeah.
No.
Think of that. We have the solution for everything. And yet, it's right then, since that's the new ground, everybody will think there's never going to be a solution ever again, especially since Trump's president. It's the end of the world, you know, and a mass panic on all levels, all through all the bodies. Which is what the Book of Revelation predicts.
Yes.
Oh, you'll notice in tonight's what's coming up. Hey, listen to this, Carolyn. I bring up this idea, I don't know where I get it from, I said, and we haven't done the Book of Revelations at that point in January 2010, but I said, you know, there are anomalies coming that aren't in the Book of Revelation, right? And Ayn goes, that's right.
Oh, wow. Great, great.
It's going to be worse than the Book of Revelation, which is where we're at now.
You got to stop this. This is how we got into this mess.
I got to stop what?
What, the best? What are we talking
coming,
about?
Coming up with this shit.
That's Opinel coming
your
through.
Idea. That's Opinel. You got to stop that Opinel business.
Yeah, it's Bob too fucking outrageous, right? It's scary.
Stop it, Bob.
It's a way bigger insight you get on ayahuasca. Take Bob. Come on. They should ban Bob.
The Obsolescer, that's his new name.
Yeah, but it's key to understand. People like the old McLuhanites, I like to quote Neil Postman, who did the book in 1985, Amusing Yourselves to Death. And he predicted that politics would just be this entertainment thing that would just get out of hand. No, that's the way it's been since 1985. What happened with Trump is he went into the entertainment bullshit and developed a purpose in it. He moved it out of entertainment, and that's what's frightening everybody. This fucking guy's got an agenda. He's a fascist. He's Hitler, because he can hijack the whole process, at least on the level of messages. I mean, he just keeps tweeting away about the latest Boy Scouts he met with and the latest ambassador from some fucking country. All inconsequential things, and he thinks he's doing a great job. And every now and then he says, yep, we're the greatest fucking administration in the history of the world. And then the journalists have to go and say, well, are there any facts to this? So let's, oh, no, everything's worse. The economy's worse. It's not true. He's lying. And they cannot believe that a liar, a conscious liar, is the way to be a good president today. That's how far, now, that's a shocking revelation, isn't it, Madeline? You'll never read a book again. Or you won't even watch a movie after processing what I'm saying now. You won't engage in anything.
Trump has changed diplomacy. I mean, because you look at that, you look at the Juncker when at that press conference, you know, I mean, he probably heard it and saw it, you know, probably talked to Merkel when Merkel, you know, engaged him in things. But this is probably Juncker's first time being in the middle of the storm and seeing the media against Trump. And it throws out the whole diplomacy, because before that and all the other presidents' administration, everything is so synthetic and clean and, you know, just like
and respectful.
Textbook.
Full of respect. Yeah, it's a safe zone. These guys, these guys go meet Trump and they get in the White House and it's not a safe zone.
Like the WWF, the World Wrestling Federation.
Yeah,
yeah. That's right. And the what is that guy, Yonkers, you're saying, is the EU guy, right? That's you're saying.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. After they leave the room, you're Yonkers. What do you say to Trump? You say, boy, they're pretty noisy, eh? Or, Jesus Christ, Trump, you're such an asshole. Look, can't you calm these people down? What would you actually say to the guy to be polite, to bleed? I don't know what you would be, but... You know, what does Trump say to these people? That's what they should record, how these guys process the experience and what they say after when they go to tea or something, you know? I guess they try to show it on the you know, that TV show that Kevin Brewey or, no, Brewey's a Nyanot. Kevin Stacey was in, House of Cards. They tried to show this panic. Because he was there trying to murder people all the time in the White House. But that's approximately, but the media chaos around it, films and movies and TV don't show. They don't show the anarchy in media. It's always a quiet little White House where the president's conspiring with some people to do some evil. But they're not showing the noise around the situation. And that's what we're witnessing now. Trump has made that ground visible. Like, what important
for that? He's,
he's the greatest wrestler, software wrestler, man, world champ. And he sits there squinting, and you might think he's pissed off, but he's just showing the shogun face, right? He's just daring anybody to try anything on him.
Yeah.
And Ion altered the goddamn recording. What do you think of that? Isn't that incredible? What do you think of that, Madeline? Did Madeline get knocked off? Okay,
no, I muted. Sorry.
You know what I'm talking about? The key question. Do we kill Stormy or not? And you go, I can't tell whether he said yes or no. They'll never know. They'll make endless trials around it, but you can't beat what Ion did. Ion fucked with the tape.
Well, the funny thing is, I've got there's one, my arrogant young friend that I talk to once in a while, just check in. He's convinced everything like this that comes up, he's like, oh, he's had it now. This is it. And yeah. and so I checked in just recently, and I'm like, really? Are you still? I'm like, how many times does it take before you realize he's untouchable?
What did he say to that?
You
can't take that.
No,
you can't
actually,
take that.
Yeah, that was the end of that conversation.
Right.
It was just dead air after that. Like, okay. That's
but
what
that,
I thought.
You know what? That's a common experience in millions of Americans' lives. Somebody says something and the other person can't take it. This shutting down of conversation is happening all the time now, right? Many people would be reporting what you just said. Well, I said that to him and he just wouldn't talk about it. He shut down. The shutting down's going on constantly every day in people's social lives. Everybody's shutting off each other.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't know.
No, just start lying, Madeline. You'll be in touch. You'll be in sync. If you do. Just make shit up.
And if you
kid. What?
MSU.
Yeah, that's right. So it's getting funny on the new exploration group because they're starting to attack me. The more violent they get, I just click like. I like their aggression at me. They're insulting at me. I have a like. Oh, that was a good statement. Yes, very good.
It reminds me of you dealing with the Church of Subgenius on that
film. Yes,
you,
same thing. Now, Brian Taylor, he's seen this for decades, and he'll come in and he'll say, this is the same goddamn shit that was on All Slack 20 years ago. Can't you guys come up with a different way to attack Bob? Why do I have to keep seeing this repeat of the same insults and Bob's same responses of indifference? You know, that's what they he's so bored of it.
It's Bob Jitsu. I mean, they can't get you in a knot. You just always, you're resilient.
Yeah.
They can't get you. Even though they try. Now they're doing this I went and looked at the cartoon thing. It's like they're just really, I mean, they don't know how to deal with you, so they have to resort to this. So I think that's what it looks like Stallman is coaching them, Bob, to me.
Yeah. Basically, Stallman's incompetent. And what's funny is, as they yell and scream at me, I keep doing the McLuhan work. I said, look at this, page 138. Look at this incredible quote. Look at this. Whoever said that? This is incredible. Look at it. I was still the teacher conducting the class while everybody's throwing spitballs at me and not even paying attention anymore. But I refused to step down and stop the class. So I really bug him when I put Carolyn in there. I announced that you were the world's most successful media colleges, and they said, that's fucking ridiculous. Dr. Dean has nothing to do with the media of communication. And here's Carolyn, one of the best communicators on the planet that they can all learn from. You know what I mean?
Right.
See,
right.
I'm showing what they don't see in the present. They don't see the present situation.
No.
They're trying to figure out whether McLuhan was a Thomist or an anarchist or a Gurdjieffian, or did Dobbs fuck him? Did Dobbs kill him? Like, what happened to Marshall McLuhan? Half the things they asked me about, I said, well, if you had an open mind, you could listen to McLuhan answer directly through the Evergreens or through Ion. We have the quote right here from him. That's never happened before, Madeline.
Shut down.
That's when they what? They get Bob derangement syndrome?
That's when they shut down. That's when they get Bob derangement syndrome.
Yeah. Hey, Madeline, what do you think of that?
What
I create
Bob derangement?
The posters start getting Bob derangement syndrome.
Yeah.
When I actually hint at what we're actually doing here. That there is an Ion. that there is remedies that are solving problems all over the fucking planet.
Yeah, you can't do that.
I can't even talk about what's going on. I have to lie and make shit up, like pretend I'm interested in McLuhan. There's not one fucking relevant quote from McLuhan, but for them, I got all kinds of relevant quotes for their little minds, you know. And what's good is that you'll notice Nigel and Brian, who are old high school buddies, they love every quote I put out because they understand the value of these obscure McLuhan quotes. I'll read this to you, Madeline.
Okay, Bob.
Here's the role of the artist today. Okay.
Oh, good.
This is what you didn't learn. Okay. Here's what McLuhan wrote 50 years ago, well, 69, yeah, just 48 years ago. The self-effacement of the artist, all right? So the artist must self-efface themselves. The self-effacement of the artist as catalyst, which is a surrender to process and ritual that is necessary not only to the artist, but to the role of the actor or scientist or sleuth, which means detective. This situation creates in turn in the audience a feeling of immediate association with corporate power. In other words, you get on the show here and you witness and get Bob virus, you start thinking you are at the center of the universe with Bob and I on. And you start getting an immediate inflation of corporate power. Now, this is McLuhan's definition of what the artist should do. I do it. Then you have to turn the book upside down to continue reading the paragraph. And he says, the involvement in role, which is what he's saying the artist does, creates the image that is collective process. That's Trump. The involvement in the presidential role creates an image that is the collective process. Each president has brought it closer and closer to them being the issue. And that's what Trump finally epitomizes. He is the collective process, which everybody's complaining about. They never had a story go on for so long, for two fucking years. Nothing but Trump on the news. Many people have told me they don't watch the news so they can avoid the Trump. You know what I mean? So he's turned off a lot of people and regular news consumption. But there's no point. They're all just waiting for the finale. When does somebody shoot him? When does somebody get rid of this fucker somehow? You know, that's when it'll be over. There's going to be amazing if he actually gets a Republican majority again in November. Oh, man, the suicide rate is going to be so big, it's going to frighten the cops. Even the cops will get frightened.
Total body meltdown is what it's going to be, Bob. I mean, he's wearing out the whole government, the, you know, Maxine Waters, Pelosi, all the clowns. I mean,
oh, my God.
He's wearing them out.
No one's ever had the same news story for remember, it's 200 years every 12 months, so we've had like 1,000 years of Trump. It's fucking, no normal human can take this.
Right.
Actually, you know what? Something just came to my attention this week about wearing them out, and apparently there's a really particular, okay, so if they're like satanic, child fucking adrenochrome suckers.
Yeah, there are troglodytes out there.
Their physicality cannot. Okay, so he's cut down the child trafficking, so their supply is dwindling big time, and he's cut off their money, so they can't go. They're really screwed, and then they're like their system cannot handle stress without whatever it is they were getting from the kids.
Right.
Like they were, and so he's literally breaking them down, like protracting this whole process, dragging out, because he's apparently, according to Q, has all the information, all the goods on these people, the deep state, but he's torturing them. He is making them, like, it's sort of awful, but it's what's going to happen. they're going to, like, physically, they are already, some of them you can see, they're breaking down, and it's going to be super obvious pretty soon who's really sick who's like been really involved in this gross stuff. And
yeah. They showed a picture last week of every president hugging Putin.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I saw that. Yeah, yeah. And Trump's not allowed.
Yeah. Because he is not being the entertaining president.